simulcast now on the iPhone and on the computer?
Well, if you ever listen to our podcast, which I know you don't, it was really bad recording last week. I mean, just a lot of static. So I'm trying to see if I can do a voice memo on my iPhone, and we'll soon find out the results about what happens after that. So I'm trying to make it better. You know, I continually strive to try to make this podcast better. As compared to you, that just shows up and goes, "Oh, what are we going to talk about? Hey, Apollo, what are we going to talk about?"
That's interesting because someone told me I was getting better very recently. So
who was that?
Might have been you.
Was it me?
Yeah.
You have been getting better. Ah. You're improving. You got to strive to be number one. You know, is that okay with you?
Yes.
And I gotta you know that when you have a crew full of people and you're on a sinking ship, you're not going to say like, "Hey, we're going to die in 5 minutes." You're going to say, "Hey, we can make it. We can do this." You know?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I get it now.
Okay.
So, wrestling.
Yeah, wrestling.
Well, I guess before we do that, better have my donuts over here. Bad News Ramen right over there.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Hey, you're getting better.
Hey, see? Thanks. See, now I want to strive to even get better and better.
There you go.
That inspirational, motivational words. You're like the Bo Dallas of this podcast over here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking more of who was that one dude on Saturday Night Live that would talk to
me? Oh, Stuart Smalley?
Yeah. I want to be more like Stuart Smalley, you know?
Because I'm good enough, yeah. I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
People like you.
Yeah. I think people like you more as proven Aww. By your 700 followers.
Yeah, but I kind of play the game, dude. You know, I mean, it's not, I think you probably have better stuff to say. I think yours is more genuine. I don't even know how I got 700 followers. I have no clue. Actually, sometimes I don't like having 700 followers because the people that, you know, I used to follow and really enjoy, I hardly ever see them on my timeline anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of.
You got too big.
I got too big, yeah. Yeah, I got too big, but the heart's still, my heart's still the same. My heart's still small.
You went like The Rock. You went corporate.
I went corporate, yeah. I sold out. So
we should get the "You Sold Chant" sold out chant in the background on here. We can have the producer can get on that. The
producer
one
never does anything. You know, he talks a big game, but he never does anything. I'm the one that has to do it all the time.
He sends you a song every once in a while.
He'll send me a song like the song that just played, but that was like 3 years ago or 2 years ago. Have we been doing this podcast for like 2-3 years already? About 3 years, huh? We're on our third year, maybe.
I think so.
Yeah. Hey, you know, over the course of those 2.5 or 3 years, you've gotten better.
that warms my heart to know.
There we go. All right, so wrestling. I didn't watch any.
You didn't watch any?
I mean, I think I saw like the opening segment. I've been really busy, so I've been falling asleep a lot. You know, mm-hmm. I saw New Japan last week, and that was pretty much it. But yeah. I mean, I haven't really had an inkling to watch wrestling. Not because of anything that's going on, but just because. I know the pay-per-view's coming up, you know, with everything being 2 weeks within each other, I don't really feel like storylines really develop as much. I mean, it's kind of like, I kind of felt like maybe the same storylines they had last week were probably the same storylines they had this week. I saw Kevin Steen versus, or Kevin Owens versus that
Neville?
One guy. Was it Neville?
Yeah.
I should probably watch that match then. No,
on SmackDown, he fought Ryder.
So did he fight Neville on
Neville on Raw was like the opening match,
and that's when I fell asleep. But it wasn't because I was bored. I mean, I think I actually wanted to see it, but mm-hmm. I'm taking it that Kevin Owens won.
Yes, he did.
All
right. He hit a pop up power bomb as well.
Wow, I would never known that. So seeing how I haven't watched wrestling that much, and this is kind of a throwaway or take home show that probably didn't deliver. Not that it's supposed to, because Raw's gotten a lot better over the past couple months, you know. But I kind of wanted to. I mean, if there's some overlying topics we can talk about, I'd rather do that.
Okay. Well,
do you have any ideas, or do you need to look off into space?
I did want to ask you what you thought about the direction of Seth Rollins, because man, I don't know I can't remember if it's gone over the past 2 weeks, but at the very least this week. You know, yeah, they did. Yeah, because 2 weeks ago he was saying how he didn't need them, right? You saw that part.
Yeah.
Okay, so they kind of extended that this week, and he was on his own. He ended up losing to J&J Security in the main event at the end, right? So, I mean, I was curious, like, where you thought that this was going, and Like, what was it good? I mean, is it a good idea? Like, if they're taking him away from the authority? Because I think we started talking about the seeds last week. I don't know. I think it's kind of interesting, just because I mean, the guy is so good, and I think, I mean, he can get over in any number of ways. But if he does split from the authority, and it was weird because the way that match went, like, the crowd was more like cheering for the authority, which I thought was kind of funny. But I mean, it seems premature to me that Seth Rollins would go on a face run, though I think he could do a really good job at it. So, I mean, I don't know if you can't really speak on it like Conan, cause you didn't watch Raw, but I mean, what do you think about the direction that he's going in, and what do you think would be good or bad?
Well, a couple things. Two things I think can happen. If Brock Lesnar is coming back and he plays the heel, I can see Seth becoming a face. But what I think more so than anything else, if I was to kind of look at the way that storyline is developing, I think there's going to be a turn. I think, you know, either Ambrose or Roman is going to, I feel that they're going to turn and join the authority. I think Seth will probably still be a part of that. You know, and if it's a case where, say, Ambrose turns and then Seth goes on his own, it's kind of more of the same type of storyline, which, you know, I'd rather just have Seth be that part of that storyline. But with the way they're kind of showing Ambrose and Reigns being friends over the past like month, I wouldn't be surprised if either one of them turns heel. And in the, you know, the main thing somewhere down the line, maybe the Shield as a whole, you know, reforms again and they become part of the authority, which I thought was something that they could have done a long time ago. And that never, you know, they kind of had inklings where they would join Triple H or Stephanie, and that never happened. I thought they would be really strong if that was the case, but I think that's the I think that's the way that it's going to go. I don't think the Shield's going to reform, but I think one of those two guys is going to turn, and I think Seth is going to be a part of that. And you know, you'll show up on next Raw with these two guys on the ring, kind of making fun of everybody and making fun of whoever the person got victimized with it. You know, if Roman wins Money in the Bank and he joins the authority with Seth Rollins, I think it does a couple things. One, it protects Rollins for a little bit, and then I think, you know, with the kind of if Rollins does the same thing to Roman that he did to Kane, it can play pretty slow. It can play for a couple, 3, 4, 5 months, and then really kind of get people behind Roman Reigns when he actually does a face turn again, and then he can challenge. And it can even be a case where, you know, he doesn't have to outwittingly or outright, you know, break away from the authority. He can just, you know, cash in that Money in the Bank out of nowhere and take Seth Rollins by surprise, and all of a sudden, you know, he has a ton of good heat on him. So right. that's kind of the way I see it. What about yourself?
Well, I don't think Ambrose can join the authority. I was kind of thinking it's funny because before, you know, we had kind of, there was times where I had said like Randy Orton was probably this generation's like closest thing to Stone Cold and being this kind of gray character that does things that you would generally think are heel tactics, but people like him. I think Dean is almost kind of like turning into that kind of character. Like some similarities to Austin, where he's just kind of anti-authority, but people like him, and I think that they should let him. I think the momentum that he's getting right now is good. I agree with what you're saying with Reigns, in that since there's been this kind of strange backlash to him and people against him, I mean, I was kind of saying this going into Mania, it kind of makes sense to let the guy be a heel if they want to boo him, and you know, I think that, you know, since he's obviously not going to be like winning the title within the next few months, I mean, it's something you could go to. And
I think that's a perfect play, you know, if they turn him heel, because I think people are starting to come around to like Roman again. And I think there's going to be a feeling when, if Roman does turn at this pay-per-view or maybe the next pay-per-view after that, people are going to be like, you know, why? You know, like, I was just starting to like this guy, and all of a sudden now they make him a heel. Now I hate him even more. So I think, you know, Roman has a lot of opportunities with him in terms of what he can do. I think the course that he's staying on right now, I like it because he's getting cheers. But I think that's the stalest way you can go. I think WWE has had a track record recently of really turning storylines on its head. And I really feel that this is the best way. You know, 2 years ago we would have said this, and we knew it was never going to happen. You know, and we're just kind of like, you know, just saying like, oh, we hope, you know, we hope this is going to happen. We know it's not going to happen, but there's that slight glimmer of hope. We're like Shawshank Redemption with Red. You know, like he's on the bus, and you know he's going to cross the border of Mexico, and he's driving that car, and he says he hopes. I mean, that's kind of how I was. And then, you know, they hug on the beach, but I'm not going to hug you on the beach. I know you want it to happen, but it's not.
Jason could do like a Photoshop video.
Yeah. With air quotes, hug.
Yes.
And it says hug.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think Roman, I think there's a lot of possibilities with Roman, and I kind of like that aspect where he can go either way.
And I think Owens might have a part in what happens here as well. And it's kind of out of nowhere because he's not really involved in that storyline. But like it just seems to me that if they're going to go with like new people in the authority, seems like logical that Owens might be a guy that they would want to align with Triple H, especially like the momentum he's getting. And they've had a couple like segments where they were kind of chummy in the back with like Triple H and Owens. And so I don't know. I think, and you know, Triple H is, well, NXT is kind of Triple H's baby. So, you know, that could be, you know, represent that as well. But yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting time. I think like this is a pay-per-view that it's, as much as it's strange that they've had so many like clustered together pay-per-views, they've all been pretty compelling. I think the shows, you know, are making me like interested. Like, you know, I'm going to watch the pay-per-views either way, but now I actually look forward to watching them. I actually feel like there's some sort of like payoff, and in general, like they're in line with the stories, and then the story moves forward. Whereas before it was like, okay, like you're just going to reset after every pay-per-view, right? So I kind of like the way that things are heading. And I think, I don't know, like there's also this whole, especially between Rollins and Owens and Ambrose, there's kind of like the indie background that they have like against each other that can be drawn on as well. So like I think, you know, you don't have to worry about is there going to be chemistry and things like that. These guys all know how to work one another. So I mean, I think there's a lot of potential there with all these guys.
The cards for these pay-per-views from top to bottom, I wouldn't say top to bottom, but there's probably about four or five matches that I've really been interested in. I think this pay-per-view is no different. Whatever the tag team match is going to be, I'm going to watch it. I don't even know what the tag team match is going to be, but I don't. Oh, it's going to be Primetime Players versus New Day.
Yeah, but I think it might be more than that. I'm not sure.
Either way, yeah. Either way, and I want to get back to Primetime Players, but. You know, then you have the Money in the Bank. You know, that's compelling enough as it is. I think Rollins and Ambrose, once again, this was a match that I did not care about 4, 5, 6 months ago. Now I actually care about it because they played them the right way. Rollins is compelling enough. Ambrose is getting the right type of push and where he's protected. And I think this is the one case where you could say, If any main event deserves to have John Cena in it, it's John Cena versus Kevin Owens. I don't think it's not going to be the main event, but that's how good that match is. You know, at least it's going to be like I want to watch it again, and I want to see what happens. I don't care too much about what the storyline is going to be. I just want to see any time I can watch a John Cena match, and it's not a typical John Cena match, the same match that I've seen over and over again. And Owens is kind of the guy that leads that match, and he does his style of match. That's a match I want to see. Especially if John Cena gets beat, even better.
Do you feel that's what this match is going to be? You think it's going to be an Owens match?
I really think that Owens is the type of performer that he has his matches now. You know, and it's even a case where, you know, it just kind of, let's just say everything that I wanted Bray Wyatt to be in terms of in the ring, and don't get me wrong, I still have a lot of stock in Bray Wyatt. I mean, Bray Wyatt is one of my favorite characters. One of my favorite wrestlers right now. But everything that I want him to be in the ring, that's what Kevin Owens is right now. And you can even to a point where Owens, the way he is on the mic, you don't have to listen to, I mean, granted, I like a good Bray Wyatt soliloquy or promo as the next guy, but when it's the same thing over and over again, Owens comes out, he says what he wants to say, I'm enthralled, and then when the man that Chris forgot comes out and doesn't match, I fall asleep. So you know, but I mean, you know, that's a you know, yeah, I think Kevin Owens is going to have his match, and I really don't care if the guy wins or loses. I really it doesn't really bother me. It's I want to see a good match, you know, and it's a case where the WWE right now, it's like there's not really any wrestler that I'm watching where the guy has to win. You know, and I kind of wanted to bring that up with you too later down the line, but you perfectly kind of got into this, and we're able to talk about it. So
it's because I'm getting better.
You're getting better. One thing though, primetime players with Titus, guy's kind of weak, dude. I mean, I have to say it. I think he has a ton of charisma, but the guy is stiff as all hell in the ring. He doesn't deliver in the ring. I kind of wanted to. And I like Titus a lot, but his ring work leaves much to be desired.
Yeah, he's a little awkward in the ring. Like he's not a smooth athlete. He's definitely got power, but yeah, he kind of misses spots and kind of like I don't know. He's just awkward in the ring. But I don't know. I still think it works for what it is for tag team wrestling. I think they can hide him a little bit. I really don't like him going to this like.
The mid boot?
No. Yeah, well, the mid boot, but this power slam finisher. I mean, I think he was better off with the Clash of the Titus. I think that's a pretty good finisher as it is, and no one else really uses it. Like, I'm not buying a power slam as a finisher in 2015.
British Bulldog, yeah. He used to win it all the time.
Like I said,
he beat Dangerous Danny Davis with it.
In 2015, I am no longer buying the. I don't see how a DDT no longer can earn a pinfall, but a power slam. Right?
Because it's powerful.
Yes.
So, being how this is in real time, guess what I have to do right now? I gotta go.
No, change the laundry.
I gotta go change the laundry. So.
So. Is the peacock gonna?
The peacock will probably make an appearance, and then if the phone turns, you have to touch it. But
yes.
Touch it nicely. Don't touch it in an obscene way.
Touch it in the morning, and then just walk away.
Yeah.
We could have gotten that song on as the lead-in too, I suppose, but I think the brood theme is probably the better way to go, being that this is a wrestling podcast. Let's see here. So, yes, I think Titus has definitely is carrying that team in terms of like personality. And mic time, and I think Darren Young is actually becoming a respectable worker. And it's funny because I wouldn't have thought like Darren Young would be able to be a guy that would carry the workload of a tag team that was viable.
And I would never thought that you'd be able to carry a podcast by yourself either. So there you go. There's parallels there.
I did this last time. You had to go to the laundry.
The laundry, the French laundry.
Ah, okay, Damon.
I don't even know that's Damon. I just said the French Laundry.
Oh, you've been there before.
I've been to the French Laundry.
Yeah.
And my wife almost got in a fight with the people sitting next to us.
Because?
Well, the French Laundry's in Napa, right? And it's like a 4-star?
Yeah.
Whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It was okay. And I've had better food. Mm-hmm. But so I'm in Napa. It's like right around spring, kind of getting close to summer. So guess what happens to me? It's the start of spring, so yeah, I had like really bad allergies, right? To the point where I just have like this constant like nasal drip, and no matter what I do, if I blow my nose or whatever, it just hurts. You know, I mean, it's really uncontrollable. I've learned to temper it, but back then I just moved back to California, so all the pollen was new to me again, and it was really bad. So there's these two rich bitches that sat next to us, and these ladies were so rich. I mean, they're like so rich. It was just like. The girl was talking about like her 2-year-old daughter or something like that, or 3-year-old daughter, about how they got like manicures and pedicures and stuff. And she was like, "Oh, that's just her thing right now." I'm like, really? That's her 3-year-old's thing is to get a manicure and a pedicure. That's her thing, and then you're enabling that. So I had to do the snort, you know, to get all, you know, because my throat is just so bad that I don't snort to just a snort. I have to itch my throat. I have to clear my throat, you know. Let me clear my throat.
And she thought you were guffawing at her.
No. She gave me a dirty look, and my wife just back when my wife liked me a lot better than she does now. She just like gave the lady like a, just like the stone cold stare, like just gave her like a death look, and the lady stopped pretty fast. But it's kind of funny because I was so messed up, my ears were itching and stuff, And so she kind of says something. I'm like, oh, you gave her a stir? She's like, yeah, I stirred it down pretty hard. So it's it was that. That's what I remember from the French Laundry.
Very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was she gonna go though? I mean,
my wife will go any time of the flipping weeks. We went to a concert one time, and it was this small little place in San Francisco, and so we're standing there, and there's like a cool couple, you know, next to us. I didn't know who they were, but you know, sometimes when you're in that small of an area, you gotta get in cool with your
neighbors,
over there, and so this guy like. This guy and his girlfriend or whatever came walking in and stood right in front of us, no big deal. And then they start like dancing and stuff. And the guy like starts bumping my wife, you know. And so she puts her arms on, she pushes the guy, and then he starts kind of saying something. And before I can even say anything, my wife just goes off and she's like, hey, she's like, I was standing here first. You know, I'm like, you know, she's like, if you want to do something, I can't even get a chance to jump in and just say, hey, you know, you don't mess with my wife. My wife's already taken care of it. Now I can throw down with the best of them. And his girl started trying to keep the peace. And she talks to me. And then I was like, hey, man, I'm like, you guys do whatever the hell you want to do. I don't care. And I said, but you touch my wife and you disrespect her. Like, you guys are going down. And that's pretty much the way it was. So, yeah, I don't have a lot to worry about with her. She's not a wallflower. She'll throw down, dude.
Pop a powerbomb to the rich bitches at the French Laundry through a table.
I think that brings up a good point. If your wife had a finisher, what would her finisher be? I don't think your wife would have a powerful finisher. She'd probably have like a William Regal's old, you know, arm like choke finisher. Remember that thing? It's kind of like a cutter, but like, you know, you whirl the arm around and it was kind of a weak finisher.
I'm thinking she'd have to, it'd have to be some kind of kick or something. Like, she's got powerful legs.
A savate kick?
A savate kick. A crescent kick,
a half moon,
if you will.
It was a half moon crescent kick.
Yeah, maybe a crescent kick or maybe some kind of leg lock. I think
the leg lock?
She could go like Jaws of Life with the legs. A lot of time on that spin bike.
I think my wife would do I don't know. I mean, I would say like a rear naked choke, but it's a pretty vicious move. You know, there's not a lot of flair, and you can really hurt someone doing it. I mean, for like the past like 45 minutes, you know, because you know she had to wake up early and stuff, and like, you know, my girls have to wake up early tomorrow as well. So she's kind of like, well, you know, the kids can be quiet and stuff, you know. And I was like, well, and I'm thinking to myself because I don't think out loud. Because when I think out loud, that's when I get in trouble. But I still got in trouble today, so I have no idea what's going on. But it was more of a case you're going to bring your oldest son over and your twins. And it wasn't that I didn't think they would be, like, I think they'd be well-behaved. But I knew that they'd be playing video games until, like, 11 o'clock at night. And my girl's got to wake up early tomorrow morning, so I texted you and, we were all cool, right? Like, you didn't, like, get all mad or anything or give me a dirty look like I just snorted at the French Laundry. But,
I did, but it was through text.
So you was it through text? It, yeah. you gave me a dirty look?
I gave you the Chuck look.
Through what, the phone. Why is this,
dude? I don't know. I just thought it sounded like the right thing to say at the time.
But for the past 50 minutes, or the 50 minutes of her being up for the rest of the night, she kept on feeling bad that she felt that me saying that, she felt that I said the kids weren't invited to her house, and she felt really bad. And I was like, dude, I'm like, what the hell's your problem? I'm like, he's, you know, this is like my best friend. He's not like that. If he was going to say something, if he felt that way, he would say it. And the whole thing is that I'd have much more enjoyment saying, hey, your dumbass kids aren't allowed in my fucking house. Get the, you know, you're coming by yourself or you ain't coming at all. So she doesn't understand that dynamic. But so I'm trying to think of a finisher. What would you give her? See, so let me be fair. So, well, actually, I did say
the first thing, the first image I had when you said that she almost got in a fight there was a pop-up powerbomb.
A pop-up powerbomb?
I think she could go pop-up powerbomb on somebody.
I think so. Pop-up powerbomb?
Yeah.
Because, so that's her finisher?
I think so.
What about a curb stomp? I think a curb stomp would be good, too.
She got some hops?
No.
Maybe that one's not quite going to work.
Well, man.
Just not getting into that just yet.
So speaking of the curb stomp, is Seth Rollins as effective with the pedigree or whatever new finish he's trying to do, or is he less effective?
I think he's I think he's less effective right now because he doesn't really have a finish. Like, his pedigree just doesn't get it done for me. I don't really know why. I mean, he's executing it correctly, but I don't know. There's just something. Maybe I'm so like.
Maybe he should say slapjack sucker after he does it. Like what was that dude's name?
Stevie Ray.
Stevie Ray. Slapjack sucker.
Yeah, maybe I don't know. I'm so used to seeing Triple H do this move. Maybe I don't know. Maybe Triple H just does it better. But there's just something that doesn't seem quite right with.
He doesn't have the excellence of execution.
It just like I don't know. It just felt like the curb stomp just completely fit who he was and I just thought it was a really good. It was a very simple move, but a move that you can really buy as something that was going to knock somebody out. And he came up with. In the short amount of time that he was using that move, he came up with, like, myriad ways to pull it off, like, as seen with that Randy Orton match, right, at WrestleMania. So, well, I guess even though Orton pulled that move off, but I don't know, it just brought a lot of, like, interesting dynamic to his matches to the point where he could win at any point in time, and I don't know, I kind of missed that move. Yeah, he needs to come up with something, because...
Well, aren't the best finishers, I mean, that's a good point, aren't the best finishers are ones that you can pull out anywhere? I mean, I think the first kind of finisher that really started doing that and the guy kind of had some fun pulling it off was the Diamond Cutter. That the Diamond Cutter was, I mean, you could do it fast. You know, I remember when he first did it, we saw a match with him against Eddie Guerrero. And I remember it was like the first time you saw the WCW product in a long time. And you watched that match, and you're like, man, what a weak move. And I was like, no, well, he does it better now. Mm-hmm. It's called a 3/4 neck, 3/4 turn neck breaker. But then when he started, like, you know, he would throw someone in the ropes, bounce off the next rope, and throw the Diamond Cutter. He would have some great spots with Benoit where
he'd get it off the headbutt.
He'd get off. Not so much that, but he would go, you know. Dallas Page would go for Benoit onto the ropes. He'd go for a backdrop, and Benoit would flip it, and then he could throw the Diamond Cutter on there. He'd do it off the top rope, you know, second turnbuckle. And then you kind of throw in, Austin as well. You know, Austin can pull that thing out of anywhere.
Orton's
as well. And I really think when you make like a wrestler, you know, like. There's some really, like, good moves, but there's some moves that you can only do in the ring, right? Some special moves you can only do in the ring, and like, at least for me, it's like, well, that's a move that I'm not going to have, because if I'm going to have, like, my best wrestler, he has to pull this finisher out of anywhere else. And I think that holds true for any type of wrestler. I mean, the spear itself I'm getting tired of the spear. You know, I think, you know, probably about 80 episodes ago, you were asking, like, what move, you know, is getting tired and stuff, and what people always throw in. I think the spear is quickly becoming a really kind of boring type move. I mean, Roman was good with it in the beginning because it added a lot of drama when you were throwing two other, three other pieces. He's teamed up with two other guys, and then they're doing like, you know, 6-man tags, 8-man tags, 10-man tags, and he can push it out, pull it out of nowhere, and it's really effective. Now when it's one-on-one, it's really kind of limiting. That's what I really liked about Seth Rollins was that he could adapt to any type of style, and he could pull stuff out of nowhere. And there's a lot of things that Seth Rollins can do that we don't see all the time. I mean, I think when he was doing when he's jumping out of the ring and doing a full flip and landing on his feet, I mean, I thought that's a move that he should do more often. Mm-hmm. I think you take away that curb stomp element from him, and it really kind of lessens the impact of me seeing him in the ring. I know he can do great stuff, but I think his finish is a huge part of it.
Yeah, and I think. You know, any guy that is really like a top guy, there's a move that they have that, you know, like, that's it, right? And he doesn't have that right now. And to be your world champion, I mean, when's the last time anybody was a world champion without a defined finishing move, right? I can't even remember.
Ric Flair? No. Because he never beat anybody with the leg lock, dude.
He never tapped anyone out with the figure
four? Not really, no. I mean, I think he maybe once or twice. I mean, he would tap out, you know, he would tap out enhancement talent, but usually it'd be like a roll up pin or you know, something else of that nature.
The grapefruit squeeze.
Yeah, maybe. I wasn't watching him during that time. The grapefruit squeeze, but
the low blow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know what the grape. Yeah, yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah. So yeah, but yeah, that it's odd. So they and they've gone through like two different moves. You know another the other move that he has that I think early on was kind of his finisher was that flying knee.
Yeah.
That's still a good move. You know, the other thing that made me like realize how effective a move that really could be was
you did it yourself?
Nah, when Klay Thompson took that knee in the Rockets series, right?
Yeah.
And because you know you could tell the guy was dazed, right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, kind of like, dude, that's really what like Rollins is moving. And I was like, yeah, if
I thought about that for a second too, but yeah, I'm not gonna steal your glory. That's a good pull right there.
Yeah. So I thought about it and it's like, yeah, if you came off with like the velocity that he's coming in, like that's a move that would put you out, right? So, I mean, I think they've kind of already kind of diminished it by making it a move that doesn't get finishes. So it'd be hard to all of a sudden make that his finisher, but they do need to figure something out. I think pretty quickly as like an established finishing move that this guy's going to go forward with. Cause I mean, I think there's too many DDTs out there now. Like a couple of different guys have some form of a DDT finisher. Like it was logic, I think, to have that pedigree the first time. But going forward with that as his move week in and week out.
Give him the Boumaier. How about that? But that Boumaier is probably too, it's too much strong style for the WWE.
Yeah, and also too, even with the with that Boumaier, like he needs to do like three or four of them to get a finish.
Well, with the way that, see, storytelling's different back over there. You know what would be good would be Muda's, Muda's move.
Yes. I agree.
Well, what the heck is it called?
The Shining Wizard.
The Shining Wizard, yeah. Give him the Shining Wizard. He could execute that pretty well.
Has any American, aside from AJ Lee, used the Shining Wizard?
No. Not a one.
That would be...
You can even do, like, the Shining Kenka kick, or the Shining...
you're talking about the Yakuza kick?
Yeah, the Shining Yakuza kick that Masahiro Chono used, too.
Yeah.
Masahiro Chono used... Did a pretty good Shining Yakuza kick.
Now, when you're saying his Yakuza kick, you're talking about the big boot, right? You're not talking about the one where he, like, kind of launches himself off the guy's leg and then does a kick to the side of the head, right?
Yeah, not a backbring kick. not the fighter Hayabusa.
No, it's not that. It's a running kick where the guy's kind of, like, kneeling.
Yeah.
And he would, like, step off.
That's what a Shining is. It's the Shining Yakuza kick. Like the Shining Wizard, it's called Shining because, you know...
He steps off the knee?
Yeah.
And then he just does like a kick, like a straight kick to the face?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. You know who uses that?
Who's this?
MVP.
Does he?
Yeah, that's his move.
Oh, he stole it.
Yes.
He stole it.
Yes.
He stole it from Masahiro Chono.
Yes. Yes, definitely. But I don't think he... he's trying to hide that fact. But yeah, no, I think a Shining Wizard probably would be... Because it'd be a lot like it'd be very similar to the way like CM Punk took the go to sleep, right?
Yeah.
It's like a move that's very well established in Japan, and people that know are gonna know where it came from. But your average like American wrestling fan would probably see it and think that he came up with it.
Yeah.
But there's enough separation from its.
Seth Rollins is the best wrestler ever.
Yeah. Hey, he's. But he's right up there as like the best there is right now.
So here's the other thing. Unless there's a pressing subject that you're ready to go with,
go right ahead.
Thank you. I'm getting better at this. Maybe not. So seeing how you're the guy that you kind of root for in Dolph Ziggler is pretty much well established with the character that he is. I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but he's not going to be in any title picture anytime soon. Who are the wrestlers right now that you're? I'm gonna pull this from that Raleigh Fingers. When the baseball and what's that one baseball? It's that baseball publication. Anyways, they had they'd have like all these guys like all these former players like give them like your top 10. You know, top 10 hitters and, you know, like top 10 power hitters. You know, you'd have like Hank Aaron go like, oh, here's the top 10 power hitters of all time and stuff. Well, Raleigh Fingers was the top 10 players that I admire. And I just go like, really, Raleigh? Admire? You're sitting there watching a baseball game and you're going like,
I admire this guy.
I really admire that guy. It's like kind of like, when I was like in sixth or seventh grade, like this girl like wrote a list of like, you know, guys she admired, and I was like, why am I number six? Like, I'm the best looking dude out of all these guys. And she's like, no, the guys that I admire. I'm like, well, how do you judge who you admire? Like, you admire this guy more than you admire me? I'm like, what am I not doing to get me to...
What should I do to earn some more admiration?
How can
I cash this admiration in?
Yeah, when can I cash it in?
How and when?
Are your parents going to be around this weekend? Because I'd like to cash it in now. But I'm like, really? So who are the top wrestlers right now that you admire? And Dolph can't be one of them. Who are you excited about with these kind of new crop of wrestlers? Because there hasn't been kind of this nice influx of talent in a long time. So who are the kind of guys that you're looking out for?
I mean, Owens is probably the most compelling guy on the show right now for me. So it's definitely Owens. I am admiring what the
Aaron Neville.
Yeah. No.
Who? Aaron Neville's a singer, right? I did that on purpose. Reverse people, Bryson, when you need him.
Yeah. I'm admiring
the new. Well, what did Aaron Neville sing?
I thought he did a bunch of covers or something.
who's that dude that, didn't you have some CD of some guy? He wasn't...
My mom had some, like, she was into Aaron Neville.
Aaron Neville?
Music, yeah.
Did he sing, like, super superstition? Very superstition. Did he sing something like that?
I don't know. You probably did.
I bet you Aaron Neville,
like I said,
has sang super superstition.
I bet he did, because, like I said, most of the songs that I've ever heard from Aaron Neville were covers.
But did he sing "What a Wonderful World"? What a wonderful! He probably did that too, right?
with that weak high voice that he had. Yeah. And then
he probably sang some Diana Ross too, right?
He was like a full force, right? He was all big and had that high pitched voice. didn't match. Let's see. New Day. I'm admiring.
You don't have to use an arm.
Okay. I'm admiring from afar.
He's the roller.
No, I think they're doing really well. I think, and it's kind of funny to me because I've been watching Xavier Woods for quite some time through his Consequences Creed gimmick over in TNA, and I never really thought the guy was going to be much, but I think he's finally figured out a way to be a good character, and it's mostly revolved around him speaking. He doesn't really seem to wrestle a whole lot, and even when he's in the rings, like, you know, he's athletic, but he doesn't have anything, like, that really stands out. But, like, he's a good hype man. I think he's a pretty good hype man for that group. He's doing a good job talking up Kofi when Kofi's in the ring. He's actually turned himself into, like, an interesting character. And just, like, relying on, like, his work. And then Xavier and Big E outside, you know, cheating or doing whatever they're doing, distracting. I think it works really well. So I'm actually really proud of them. Because, like, not that I'm, like, a huge mark for any one of the three. They got stuck with, like, what seemed to be a really bad gimmick, and they turned it into something that I think really works for them. Let's see. You know, I can't really say it because now Kid's hurt, but, like, I really like that Cesaro Kid team. I think
Kid got hurt?
Yeah.
When did he get hurt?
A week or two ago. So I have no idea what's going on with that, but that's potentially catastrophic to Cesaro's career once again. Because I don't think there's any idea of what's going to go, what direction that guy's going to head in. Dean, I've been really into recently. I've always been liking Roman, so I'm not going to throw him in there. But I've always liked the character that Ambrose was. But I think that he's actually, like, doing something now with it, and that's kind of got me, like, excited. Because there was a time where, you know, I like this guy, but he's not doing anything. He's not going anywhere. And now he is, and I'm enjoying the ride that he's going on. Let's see. Is there any other guys that I really am really into right now? I mean, I really want to see Samoa Joe. I'm actually, like, looking forward to once after we're done with this, when I go home.
He debuts tonight, right?
Right.
Yeah.
He's going to have his first match, or he already had it, and we just, you know, just haven't seen it yet. But on NXT, just... Really can't wait to see Samoa Joe go up to the main roster or, you know, he might not be there for a while because he might be the guy that they're going to rely on. And because the roster on NXT is really thin right now because of Owens getting called up and a couple injuries, I mean, it might just have to resort to, like, Samoa Joe against Finn Balor for, like, the next 6 months just to carry that. And I mean, you could see some really, be a, I think, really interesting, like, mix of, you know, Joe can definitely do, like, the strong style, and that's kind of what Balor grew up in, and now they're trying to, like, kind of work their way into the WWE system, but NXT gives a little bit more freedom than WWE does, it seems. I'm assuming that's going to be the feud, unless they keep bringing Owens down to fight these guys. But between that threesome, that triangle of guys, you know, for the next few months on NXT, really be looking forward to that as well. I can't really think of any other guys, like, you know, newer guys that I'm really, like, you know, really high on. But I think overall I like the roster pretty good. You know, Neville's matches are watchable. I don't particularly care for the guy. It's hard for me. You know, I would love to say Wade Barrett.
But do you admire Neville?
I don't. I admire his stick-to-itiveness.
Do you put your do you make your hand into a fist and rest it on and put your chin you know on it so you can rest your chin, yeah. Have the chin rest on your fist and go
and ponder.
I admire that guy.
Yeah, no, it's not to that point with him. No, okay, I can't say. Barrett, I would love to see Barrett get some kind of run, but that doesn't seem like that's ever going to happen. So, I mean, those are pretty much the guys that I'm really interested in WWE right now. You got some different guys, or are they yours about the same as that?
Yeah, I mean,
who did I leave out? How's that?
I think you left out Bray Wyatt. I think Bray is a guy that, it's funny, Bray had a lot of push after that Royal Rumble, and he's kind of fallen off again. And I think, you know, it's funny, I think Bray is one of these guys that kind of fell through the cracks in terms of when they introduced a lot of NXT guys, they had a lot of gimmicks. And now I think Kevin Owens has really changed that whole aspect of it, where it's like, just be the guy that the wrestler that you have been. I think they've seen some mistakes that they've done with Adam Rose, maybe a little bit with Bo Dallas. I think Bray has a lot of traction on his character, but he needs to have his two guys with him. I don't think he can do it by himself.
They just need to figure out what they're going to do with this guy. I mean, there's almost nobody. I think, like, Bray and Wade Barrett have more start and stop in their career than anybody. It's like, they started going like they're going to do some Ryback and Bray Wyatt feud, and then, like, that's gone nowhere. Now I guess Ryback's going to start feuding with the Big Show. But Bray had this whole, like, you know, this kind of, like, maybe 3 weeks where he was talking about somebody. And so whenever he does that, you know, like, they're building to something big. And then they did, like, this really quick, like, Bray Wyatt Ryback for, like, maybe 2 episodes, and then that was it. Like, what the hell is that? I don't understand what the point of that is. And now Bray Wyatt's pretty much off TV because now they don't know what they're going to do with him, I guess. They almost, like, the match that he had with Reigns, I thought was a pretty good match. But then, you know, he lost it, which is fine. But now he's not in the Money in the Bank, and I don't think he's on the card at all. So, like, it's just like they got this talent that they got no idea. It's like a lot like Wade Barrett. It's like a talent I think everybody would recognize, you know, this guy.
Well, it's a lot like Dolph Ziggler, too. I think he put Ziggler in there as well. But,
yeah. I mean, but I think it's easy for them to pigeonhole Ziggler because they always do that with the smaller wrestlers. But when you got guys that still fit, like, all the stereotypical, like, they check all the boxes of the stereotypical, like, WWE, like, heavyweight champion contender. Like, Wade Barrett checks all the boxes. Bray checks all the boxes. Dolph realistically does, but he's small, so they're always going to be able to hold that against him. But I just don't understand. Like, Wade, you say, okay, you know, he seems to get injured kind of frequently, right? But there's really nothing that you can check against.
It's not like Dolph is smaller than, you know, Rollins. I mean, Rollins are pretty much the same size.
Right.
I mean, it's just kind of a, you know, I don't, I agree with what you're saying with Dolph Ziggler, but at the same time, I think it's kind of a case where, you know, it's kind of the same thing with Bray Wyatt and Wade Barrett. You have three guys that can get the job done. Injury issues aside, there really isn't any injury issues anymore. I still get afraid when Wade Barrett, you know, gets into the ring. I feel that he's going to pop his hamstring doing it. But for the most part, you know, he's been fine. Dolph is, I mean, Dolph, how many times does Dolph have to prove that, you know, he's ready to be a main event champion? And then I think Bray's ready too. I mean, the whole thing is, start of the year, you know, you're looking at Bray Wyatt going like, okay, give this guy maybe eight months to a year and he's going to be a champion of some sort. I think Owens has fit that bill. I think, you know, Owens coming in, I mean,
think Owens coming in has hurt Bray Wyatt?
Well, by far, yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think both of these guys, I think Owens, I hate to say it, I think he's the better wrestler. I think everything he's doing, he's a five tool talent. I mean, he can do everything. You know, he can talk, he can wrestle, he can play whatever role they need him to play. And the whole thing is that while he's doing it, he actually does it better than most people out there, and he's compelling. I think Bray was very compelling when he first came out, but I think, you know. And I mean, he won our match of the year with Daniel Bryan. I mean, the guy can put on a match, but I think he's more aura mystique. And in order to, here's a guy that says that, you know, that he's getting new, you know, he gains new followers and you know, he's getting people following him. Well, nobody follows him. And the two people that were following him that kind of gained credence to his whole cult type of mentality, they're not with him anymore. So right now, all he does, he just spews vitriol, you know, just like, it's like, yeah, but, you know, it's like, I want to see you wrestle. I don't want to see you talk every flipping show.
Yeah. I would say if you're going to have a character like Wyatt, there has to be like a clear direction, because the way he talks is very abstract, but you kind of have to know where he's going. Like, it's very easy to follow Kevin Owens because he's very straight to the point about what he's going to do, and he's good with it. But when you get the, like, this kind of like speaking in like riddles that Bray Wyatt does, coupled with the fact that they're changing the direction of his story every 5 minutes, then yeah, I think what you're saying is right. It's just like, you know, come on already, you know, let me see you wrestle, or put him in a feud with something that's going to actually go somewhere. It makes it hard to follow along with the Bray Wyatt story right now.
Well, not only that, but when they put him in programs with certain people, you know, the timing is never right. I mean, he was in a program with John Cena. Well, John Cena wasn't embracing the role that I think WWE slowly wants him to do. And I really think that his program with Cena, he should have beat Cena with that. And it looks like, you know, and the whole thing is, I'm not saying that Owens is going to beat Cena, but the difference is that Bray beat Cena, but every time he beat him is through some gimmick. And then Cena came through on the end, you know, with his Marine gear on and with his explosions and beat him
in a box.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Something stupid like that. You know, Owens beat Cena straight up. It was a clean finish. No outside interference, no tomfoolery. So, I just think his timing isn't off, but he's a victim of the changing landscape. And when Bray debuted, there was a lot of things up in the air. You had The Shield, you had CM Punk, you had Daniel Bryan, you still had John Cena, The Rock would show up every now and then, you had Brock Lesnar. Now, I mean, Kevin Owens shows up at a time where everything's established, and it's very easy for him to make a mark. Now, I'm not saying when Bray came out, he made his mark. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm like, he was like must-see TV. But there's no clear direction. Right. I think Owens has a way better direction because everything is normalized now.
All right. I'll ask a question then that I would never have thought I'd be asking, but do you think that the WWE would be better off if they hadn't unified those two titles and you could have the former WCW belt, like the heavyweight championship that a guy like Bray Wyatt could go for, a guy like Dolph or a guy like Wade could have, like some kind of title that was higher like than the Intercontinental that would show that they're in the direction towards being like the world champion?
No. I think they're better unifying that title if only for the reason that your programming is more streamlined. I mean, I got tired of I got tired of SmackDown storylines that were never going to go anywhere because it was just superseded by Raw. I mean, now, like, SmackDown is a program it's supposed to be. It's the B-team, and I'm watching good matches from the B-team because sometimes the B-team is better than the A-team. So I don't think you have... I don't think you have the development opportunities with those two belts just because it really, you know, SmackDown for a while was just really becoming it was a commercial for Raw. You know, it wasn't even a commercial for Raw. It was a recap of Raw. I mean, they still kind of recap, but now it's kind of like 5 minutes or 3 minutes before the match that's going to happen, where before they do whole segments on Raw. And I think having those two belts really, you know, brought a problem with that because that belt, that person that had that belt, the SmackDown belt, was competing on Raw. So it was very easy for them to, like, kind of recap what happened with the main belt, then recap what happened with the second belt. And then you typically had, like, a good kind of main event. But the whole thing lead up to it was just, like, watching a commercial and you're just sitting going, like, what the heck am I doing? Now it's, you know, SmackDown is really giving an opportunity for these secondary guys. I mean, you're seeing all these tag teams. You're seeing the Lucha Dragons. You're seeing
Zack Ryder.
Yeah. You're seeing. Well, there's nothing wrong with Zack Ryder going.
Yeah,
out
I like
there.
Seeing Zack going.
But yeah, but you have Goatface and the other dude. It's been such a long time; those guys have been on TV. I forgot their names. Rowan and Harper. You know, you have a Rowan and Harper vignette. You know, so they're devoting time to kind of building up guys to see if they can hit that Raw roster. And then at the same time, you have a guy like Owens that can really, you know, needs to develop his character. And he's doing it, and it's not prefaced off of Raw. He can do what he wants to do. So, I think it's more of a case where I think Kevin Owens is hurting a lot of people. You know, that people that were kind of starting to get a little push. I think Kevin Owens has gotten so big so fast that I think he's hurting a guy like Bray Wyatt. I think he's hurting a guy like Bo Dallas.
Okay, but even if let's say that Kevin Owens never came up to the main roster, right? Bray Wyatt still wasn't going to get a title run within the next year.
I think he was. I mean, if you look at that Royal Rumble, I mean, he was dominant in that Royal Rumble, and I think they were positioning him to kind of be a main type of heel, or at least be a heel that someone could go against. I think what happened with that was that Roman Reigns was supposed to win that belt, and I think they're building up Bray Wyatt to kind of be one of these guys to kind of. Somewhere down the line, at least face Roman Reigns or face whoever wins the title off of Roman Reigns. And then they threw that curveball with Rollins, and then it got established that now you have a heel champion. When you have like a good heel champion, you don't need a guy like Bray. You don't need that. You don't need a secondary heel. You don't need a secondary heel to carry anything. And I think that's what happened to him. I saw after that Royal Rumble, I felt that within 8 months to a year, I don't think he would have had the main belt, but I think he would have had a title.
Like what? Like Intercontinental?
Intercontinental, U.S., whatever it was. But, you know, he would have some type of title.
So...
Hardcore championship.
Okay. Well, and you think Intercontinental would be a good step for him?
I would much rather see him have, like, the U.S. belt. I think the U.S. belt right now is stronger than the Intercontinental belt.
Well, obviously, because it's on Ryback. But, I mean...
Yeah.
Since... Okay,
if he comes out and beats Ryback,
right,
I'm all for it. And if it's a case where he's wrestling every week, then hell yeah, I want to see him win the Intercontinental belt. I want to see Bray Wyatt in the ring every week. Because the guy, people forget how good this guy is in the ring because all they have him do is talk.
Well, it just seems like, I mean, like, I think what you're saying was mostly accurate. Like, his trajectory was a guy that was going to go straight after, like, the world title. And didn't seem like he was going to be a guy that was going to be going after, like, mid-card titles. But now that the landscape has changed, like, is that a... I mean, obviously, it's going to be good for him because it'd be his first championship in WWE. But, like, does it kind of seem like it's a step down from where you thought he was going to be? Or you're okay with what it is?
I was already prepared for a step down because I felt he took a step down when Rowan and Harper left. I mean, he's a lot stronger. I think he's in the main event picture a lot easier with those two guys behind him. The whole thing is that after that Royal Rumble match, you're looking at him going, like, this guy can get it done. He was the most compelling thing in that Royal Rumble match. I mean, when he went out, I'm sitting there going, like, this isn't right. I didn't get so mad that Daniel Bryan got kicked out, but I was like, Bray's done all the work. This is like Bray's, like, this is his Royal Rumble. And he kind of just gets unceremoniously thrown out. Then he loses to The Undertaker, right? So, I mean, it's like anything that he does in the Royal Rumble, right, I think gets taken away because he has to do a job for a guy that can't get it done in the ring. And even then, I mean, like, even what he did leading up to that Undertaker match was a lot better than what a lot of people could do, right? I mean, you look at all the guys that Undertaker has faced, what they've done promo-wise. The only guy that's done anything worthy of a promo is probably CM Punk. Brock Lesnar and Undertaker was fine, but this was before Brock Lesnar, if I can say this, became Brock Lesnar again.
Brock.
I mean, it was all Paul Heyman. It's kind of the same thing. Like, Paul Heyman's great on the mic. Mm-hmm. I think Bray's great on the mic. Bray did as much as he could with a failing match that has now become. And, you know, it's just funny. The guy's doing jobs, and he's paying his dues. I just want to see those dues start paying off, which I don't see any time in the immediate future.
Right, yeah. It just seems like... And that's all.
So I would take the Intercontinental belt. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and I thought it was the right move to combine those two belts, but it does seem like there's a logjam of guys at the top that are like, it's a small amount of guys that could potentially win the world title, and it seems like, you know, the line is pretty much filled right now. And a guy like Bray, who I think really should be someone that's in that mix, I think he's clearly, in their eyes, a few steps behind those, like, maybe three or four guys that they really could seriously get that belt within, you know, by the end of the year.
I'll pose you this. Is there any person with a straight gimmick that can ever be in the main event picture or in the title world title picture? Because you look at all the guys that are in that title picture right now. Is there any guy that has such a straight, like, obvious gimmick? Is that guy ever going to be a world champion in this new age of, you know, reality wrestling or non-kayfabe wrestling?
I don't know. I mean, I think Ambrose kind of has a gimmick thing going. I could see Ambrose as world champion, but I don't know that WWE.
But
can. I mean,
but you talk about Ambrose gimmicks, which is really kind of based off of reality of who he is.
Right.
I mean, I think it's like an extension of him. And I think he has fun with it. Bray's gimmick is just like, you know, Bray's gimmick is out of left field, you know, and yeah, Bray's embraced it. I think he does really well with it. But I just don't think, you know, you start talking about all these people up on top. You can even probably put Wade Barrett in there as the king, right? I think Sheamus, for a small part, probably the same thing. You know, I mean, but these guys have less, you know, Wade has the king gimmick. Sheamus has like this
Celtic warrior.
Yeah, evil Celtic warrior gimmick or whatever. But they're so soft in comparison to what Bray Wyatt's gimmick is. Same thing with Ambrose as well. I think Ambrose has a softer gimmick than Wade and Sheamus does. And it's the direct opposites. I mean, if you have a gimmick, Ambrose is on the low end and Bray Wyatt's on the opposite end of like entrenched gimmick. Do you think a guy that has that type of gimmick like Bray Wyatt does, will he ever become a world champion?
Like 6 months ago, I would have said yes, but...
So what's changed?
Yeah, no, I'll say yes.
Really? You'd say yes? You think a guy like Bray Wyatt can be a world champion?
I think so.
With his gimmick the way it is?
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Well...
I think he can.
Oh no, I think he can too. But
I don't think that it's his gimmick. I think what you're saying is right. I think that Kevin Owens, they're too similar in like in build and in look, and I think that there's only I think that the town ain't necessarily big enough for the both of them. And I think Kevin Owens just hot-shotted his way right past Bray.
Is this going to be the whole kind of honky-tonk man versus Dusty Rhodes? You know, the big man on campus. And they do a dance-off and stuff.
I guess so. But I just, yeah, like, they're too... I just, yeah. Like, Bray had this really...
I just wanted to say, I'm the big man on campus. I'm the
big man on campus. Like, Bray had this very unique look as, like, you know, because most of the guys in WWE, you know, they're extremely, you know, they're all in really good shape and stuff like that now. And then Bray was like that one oddity of this kind of like overweight, just brawling kind of crazy person. And now like Owens is probably even like worse physically to look at than Bray Wyatt, but he's just this brawling crazy guy, and I think that's hurting him. But I think that they could have played it correctly. I know what you're saying. Like, I think the conventional answer would be, I mean, in the modern era, you can't have a guy like Bray Wyatt. He can't cross over, right? Because he can't go and do like TV interviews and stuff like that. And because he has to stay in his gimmick, right? So in that sense, in today's day and age, yeah, it's gonna be difficult for a guy that's so stuck in a gimmick to go out and do like PR campaigns and whatnot. But I think that he would be a good champion. I think he could do it. I mean, he could carry that show as the number one guy.
I just think, you know, I agree with what you say, but if Undertaker was in his prime and they wanted to put the belt on the Undertaker with his Undertaker gimmick, I think they'd do it in a second, you know. And I think that's just kind of, you say that, you know, a guy like Bray can be the world champion, you just don't think it's going to happen. And I just, you know, I'm just kind of sitting going, like, how many times you got to put Bray Wyatt through this stuff? Like, you try to have him coming through NXT, it wasn't working. He got this gimmick, he became hot as all hell, and instead of just going with it, you've put all these roadblocks in his way. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is don't count on Bray yet. I think Bray does, I mean, Bray cannot go move by move with Kevin Owens because he hasn't been allowed to. But Bray has enough in-ring antics where he can just tell a good story. I mean, him doing his bridge, you know, resting on his head and flipping over. And, of course, he can pull a finisher out of anywhere as well.
Yes.
Sister Abigail, you can do that. So, you know, hopefully somewhere down the line, if they screw up with Kevin Owens and they continually screw up with Bray Wyatt, maybe we can see a match with both of these guys. That'd be something I'd want to see. But if that's happening, that means that business is not good for either one of them. So let's just leave it at that. So let's go ahead and get into a Hall of Kayfabe. I've been carrying the Hall of Kayfabe for the past couple weeks. So I'm having my fingers crossed over here. I hope that the Hall of Kayfabe is just your thing right about now, Dean.
Well, it's quite funny because like last week you had somebody and then I had something in mind.
And you forgot?
No.
Oh, okay.
And even if I had forgotten, I would have been reminded, because what I was actually going to do is I wanted to induct the Brood last week.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like, I'm not, you know, I am not any kind of mark for Gangrel, and because we've already inducted Edge and Christian, and I don't feel like I could like reasonably induct Gangrel on his own, but I think
you could. You can make an argument that you could.
You probably could, but someone could that was like a bigger Gangrel fan. But I can't. Like, my biggest thing with Gangrel is that he kind of was the vehicle to get Christian and Edge over. But I think the Brood, for what it was, like, and talk about like being gimmick based. I mean, in that time, it kind of worked. I thought it was dumb. I thought, like, why the hell do I care about vampires, right? But the thing was, like,
it was cutting edge. It was before the whole
The cutting edge.
Yeah, you like that?
Yes, but the thing was, I watched them and like, dude, these guys can wrestle. Like, these guys are really good. And then you see that entrance when they're coming up from the floor with the music, and that just set the whole thing off. I mean, still to this day, like, even just on Twitter, like, you get people like talking like, oh, what's the greatest song, the greatest entrance? The Brood theme always comes up, and just the entrance, like. For a guy that I could care less about, like, it just set it off. So like, the music had a ton to do with it, the entrance. But he was a guy that was kind of the established guy out of those three, and the veteran. So I think he kind of led them in the early parts of their career, you know, into a direction. But he did a good job with them. And then later on, I mean, I thought it was kind of weak that he just took on the Hardys. But it gave him something to do. So, like, there's four guys that really, you know, in the Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian, that were really mainstays of the tag team division, the Attitude Era. And a lot of the success of those guys came with them kind of, like, you know, in some ways being mentored and pushed through by Gangrel.
So are we putting Gangrel in or are we putting the Brood in?
I'm putting the Brood in, I think, unless you want to make a compelling argument that Gangrel should get it on his own.
I don't think I have that compelling argument. Gangrel, so here's the thing. I saw Gangrel when he debuted, you know, like his first couple of debut matches, and he had something there. I mean, he had some intangible quality to him where I wanted to watch him wrestle again. And I think what really helped him was I think he had a pretty decent finisher on the video game.
He had some kind of DDT.
Yeah, right? It was like an impact DDT. But I think you're right. I mean, I think the second that he paired up with Edge and Christian, I mean, the second that he got with Edge and Christian, you look at Edge compared to those two other guys, and you're like, that's the star. And Edge, they tried to make Edge a star beforehand. I mean, and they, you know, they paired him up with Sable. He fought Mark Mero, and I even think he fought, I don't know who he fought. I don't know who it was, but, it was one of the Boricuas, and he actually injured one of the Boricuas by jumping out of the ring. But, you know, Edge was kind of one of those guys you looked at him and said, okay, this guy has something, but there was nothing there. I mean, he was like, you look at like kind of his Titantron video, he's like kind of in the street somewhere, like in an alley, and he's like all by himself, and then he's running straight at you. It was just a strange type of thing, and he really didn't talk, and you know, he's like this extreme guy. He's kind of like a pre John Morrison type character, without any of the personality or any of like he was like this extreme guy, but it wasn't like extreme or whatever it was. But then, you know, you're right, when they came out with this entrance, they came out from under the floor, and the guy that you saw, right, at least I did, was Edge. I mean, and I'm going like, yeah, this is something that he needs. Now he's doing something. And then, you know, then I think, you know, Edge is one of those guys that his push has come from other guys. I mean, Gangrel gave him kind of some type of semblance of personality where his gimmick was coming from. And then I think when they broke away from the ministry, they broke away from, you know, it was the corporate ministry for a while. They broke away from The Undertaker and stuff. Then I really think that Christian really pushed Edge as well. I mean, I think Christian really opened up the comedic side of Edge. Mm-hmm. Edge, I think, played off it. And then over the course of time, like, even though, if you look at the beginning of Edge and Christian was the guy that started everything. And then Edge was the finisher. And then it got to the point where Edge really started showing up on his own. So you can't have that dynamic without Gangrel. And I think just with the stars that Gangrel has made, I mean, even like the Hardy Boys, they were started off with P.S. Michael Hayes, and they're supposed to be the new Freebirds and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, the Brood just off of the talent, I mean, I think, you know, Edge and Christian were way more talented than Gangrel was, but Gangrel could do a match. And it's just a case where I think he got hurt, and there was some licensing issues with Gangrel as well. I think Gangrel owned like his name of his license, and it was owned by a comic book company or whatever. So there's always obstacles with Gangrel for him like really taking off, because I think part of the percentage of using Gangrel in any type of way to promote your company, it was like White Wolf. For some reason, and I don't even know what White Wolf is now, but they owned his name.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, exactly. He was used courtesy of White Wolf, so he could never get too far.
He was who?
He was his name, like in video games and stuff, was used courtesy of White Wolf. Like they had to pay this company White Wolf, you know, to use his name or use the Gangrel name. So
yeah, because a couple years ago, Gangrel was in the game, and they did like have a special
And I think Gangrel used to be a comic book, not Gangrel himself, but there was a comic book called Gangrel. Mm. So that's what, maybe, I don't know what it is, but maybe that's what.
Well, I know was. On the independent scene, he still uses the Gangrel name, so obviously like, he owns it.
Yeah. But yeah, the Brood definitely get, Brood's a perfect spot for that. All right.
And then perfect that you made me push it back a week because you got the song.
Yeah, and I didn't even plan it. I was going to run some J Dilla and, I was like, oh, there's the Brood. Hey, there it is.
There it is.
So we don't have the golden mic right now because you came a lot earlier than I expected.
That never happens, baby.
Yeah, you've never heard that before.
No.
So Game of Thrones.
You gonna ask me something, or are you just, you're gonna say Game of Thrones?
You gonna ask me something?
Go.
Go, talk about Game of Thrones. Remember, I did tell you that a dragon would make a reappearance. This was the second to last episode. What are your predictions?
Would that be the penultimate episode?
I guess so.
Okay.
It's the take home show for the finale.
Okay.
What do you think is going to happen? So let's go. Daenerys. What do you think is going to happen with Daenerys? And I'll tell you whether you're right or wrong. No, I'm just joking.
I think she's going to start to gather up the troops and come up with a plan to head towards Westeros. That'd be my guess.
Okay. Cersei, what do you think is going to happen to Cersei?
Time to die. I think she might be... Well, I don't know what the order of trials. Someone's going to have to die. Okay. Someone has to die in this last episode. And you got... I mean, between Cersei, Ser Loras, and what's the sister's name?
Marjorie.
I think one of them has to go. I think Cersei would have the most impact if she died, but she was the last one to get arrested. I don't know what the order of the trials is going to be, but I could see. I think one of those three has to go.
Okay. I want to say something, but I'm not going to say it right now. Okay, so we have Sansa. You care about Sansa right now?
See, I think they teased like she was going to be the one that might die, so I don't think it's going to happen. I'm not a big Sansa mark, but I am a big mark for the House of Stark, and it's like you got all these Starks around, and I know if any one of the Starks knew where the other Stark was, they'd go and help him out. So I would like to see, just for like the reunion side of it, I want Snow to get to Winterfell. That's what I want.
You want a big family reunion?
I do.
There's only like four people left in the family, but okay. So Arya, what's going to happen to Arya?
I think she's going to kill somebody.
Someone's going to die.
I don't think it might not be the fish guy, or like I think she saw some other guy that was like mistreating some female. I think that guy's going to go.
Yeah, well, he's the Kingsguard, part of the Kingsguard.
Okay, well, okay, yeah. that guy's in trouble.
Okay, Janos Slynt, I think it was. Tyrion.
Well, I mean, Tyrion's fate is tied to Daenerys at this point, so, I mean, I think if she's going to start, like, organizing the attack on Westeros, well, she's going to say the word, but Tyrion's going to be the guy that's going to organize it and come up with the plan. So, yeah, I think that's going to happen. I think they're going to figure out a way, what's the best plan of attack, and then start getting to Westeros. They've been hanging around in Meereen too long.
Okay. You going to clear your throat? There you go. Good. At least it's not a cough. Let's see. Jamie.
I have no idea. It doesn't seem... Okay. It seems like the king is that the king of Dorne?
Yeah.
Okay. It seems like him and Jaime can find common ground. But it doesn't seem like the wife of whatever Martell that got his...
Oberon.
Of Oberon, yeah.
You forgot that guy already?
I couldn't think of his first name.
But, it's understandable.
But
I shouldn't come at you forgetting someone's name because I can't remember anybody's name. What's your name, G?
Yeah. She's not going to let that go. So, I don't know. I'm interested to see what the Sand Snakes do. I want to see some Sand Snake action.
Some Sand Snake action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey. It's Jon Snow.
I think he has to get the message that he's needed at Winterfell. And I think he's going to march on Winterfell. I think he's going to start the march to Winterfell.
And Stannis is involved with that.
Yeah, man. Are you asking about Stannis?
Yeah. First of all, I mean, that scene with Stannis and his daughter and stuff, I mean, that was just, I mean, it was just bad. I mean, it was just a very hard scene for me to watch.
So.
And I thought Stannis came through perfectly with that. In terms of
how he acted, and as tough as that scene was, I thought, if you can say it was done well, it was effective. Let's just say that.
So, you know, a week or two ago, I was in here talking about like how I was really starting to like Stannis,
yeah.
And then he goes and pulls a move like that.
He pulls a dick move.
Yeah, pulls a dick move. Yes. But then the first thing that I thought of was this show, and how the feminists were all up in arms about the rape of Sansa, but like I don't see anybody being like, I'm never gonna watch this show because they're promoting infanticide or like whatever the word would be, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, that was as bad, and I mean that's what we're kind of saying. Like, there's some really gruesome bad stuff that happens on this show, and I. I'm kind of like immune to it at this point. But that was right up there with what happened to Sansa, I think. I don't see any outrage. It's within the context of what the show is.
Yeah.
But it was brutal. Okay, how about this? Was there like a mention of like, so the Red Lady, she said like they needed to kill like royal blood, right?
Yeah.
Was there like some kind of mention of Snow?
No, but I think though,
wasn't there like an illusion, like we could get the guy from Castle Black? Was there something like that?
There's something like that. And also like, she also tried to seduce Jon Snow as well.
Right.
So a lot of what's going on right now with Snow and the way it's kind of going is, I think it's funny. Like I asked my wife, I'm like, so who do you think Jon Snow's parents are? And she goes, well, Ned Stark. And she was like, Cersei. I'm like, really? And like, is that who you really think it is?
She thinks Snow's parents are Ned and Cersei.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell's the matter with you? So I kind of tell her that, you know, the prevailing theory now, which I brought up probably like 2 years ago, and now it's starting to catch fire. I'm not saying that I'm the only one. There's a lot of people that read the books that say the same thing, but it's Rhaegar and Lyanna Stark. But there's a lot of things that point to it, you know, Jon Snow being the union of those two. Melisandre, the Red Lady or whatever, tries to seduce him, and you need some type of like royal blood to like either like produce a, produce
whatever
like
a demon, was,
like a demon wraith or whatever it was, or blah blah blah. But whatever, that's a stupid thing. At the same time too, I saw this somewhere. I'm not taking the full credit for this, but there was some, you know, there was something on Facebook and saying like why, what's happening in Game of Thrones really is proving the theory that it's that Snow is the product of Lyanna and Rhaegar. But they did bring up a good point where the name of the series of the books isn't Game of Thrones. It's the Song of Ice and Fire. Well. You have Jon Snow in ice, and you have
Daenerys.
She's fire. So, that could be reading something into that as well. All I'm going to say is, this last episode, shit's going to go down, Dean. Yeah, things are going down, and you're going to have as much outrage as Ned Stark getting beheaded and the Red Wedding. There's an event that's going to happen that is going to be that's going to be huge, and there's going to be a lot of people pissed off.
Well, I mean, I think there's only three people in the show left that their death could bring.
Well,
that much
I don't want to. I mean,
no,
you're already thinking that, though, right?
I don't think Snow's going to die. I don't think Tyrion's going to die, and I don't think Daenerys is going to die. So, I mean, I think those three are the only ones that would bring like the outrage. So. I would be shocked if any one of those three goes. Anybody, I think those are the three untouchables on that series right now. Anybody else is fair game. Like, if Stannis goes, like, I think Stannis is a pretty strong character right now, but I don't think Stannis is long for that world. And Cersei has been a really strong character for quite a while, but if she, I think, I could see her going, I could see Jaime going, I could see the Sand Snakes taking Jaime out.
Or Bronn taking Jaime out? You never know. You're talking about those breasts of power.
Long as he's getting some pussy. Long as he's busting somebody's gills.
That sounds like the breasts of power. Sounds like a an old X-Clan song. Witnessing the breasts of power.
It sounds like a
Yo, Braun, time for a ride.
It sounds like an Attitude Era faction that would have been led by Trish Stratus.
Breasts of power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who would be your stablemates? Lita. Maybe the cat, maybe?
Melina?
Yeah, but, yeah. Well, wasn't really Attitude Era, though. Melina wasn't really part of Attitude Era. It was like the...
You don't think so?
Nah. All right, we don't have to have this debate right now. We're finishing the story. She wasn't part of the Attitude Era. Okay. So, all right, Muya scale number 113. Better have my donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. And hopefully the recording comes out and it gets a little bit better. And we'll go from there, Dean.
All right. No show next week because I'll be out of town. But in 2 weeks, we'll be back. And I guess we'll probably be able to recap Game of Thrones. I'm going to have to miss it on Sunday, too, which is kind of pissing
me off. That's foul.
It is.
Well, so I'm not coming over your house to see...
No.
It didn't shake down that way?
No, you're going to have to
watch. Maybe I can go to your house and watch it.
Without me there?
Without you there. Nobody there. And I'll just, like, let myself out the door. And then you'll like, walk in. All your beer's gone. All your food's gone. Your wife's ice cream that she makes, it's all gone. And I leave just a mess all over the place. And then go, like, thanks.
Yeah. No, I think you're probably going to have to watch...
Toodles.
I think you're going to have to watch the pay-per-view in your own house with your own network account.
With my own, yeah, because yes. I do have. You know, we didn't even talk about New Japan, dude.
This is true.
But it was tag team, and it was okay.
Yeah,
it didn't blow me away, but some decent matches.
Mm-hmm.
It was all right. Yeah. I think Makabe I think he came through. I think that guy's great on the mic. I think when he's doing his interviews, that guy's a stud, dude.
Yeah, I like
his shirt
quite a bit.
Yeah.
The Unchained Gorilla.
Yeah. All right, man. So, Muscle number 113. We'll check you out in 2 weeks, and we'll go from there.